This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Can the owner of a big fuck-off red bus from North London move it from the Etihad Stadium pitch? It's Tuesday, the 2nd of April. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Adam Booker.
And I'm Lee Bardsley.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Unlike Mr. Mikel Arteta's Arsenal, we've mustered up some courage to make it into... we're going to go for it. We're going to have some attacking displays on show. Basically, we're just going to pick up the pieces from yesterday's episode. Obviously, only one talking point, really. Heading into this week, the goalless draw, but plenty of talking points to pick up from. Okay, then, let's get straight into it. Like I said, if you haven't already, immediate reaction was available with Ollie Kirsch and Alex Brotherton from yesterday. I've got Luke and Adam. We're gonna go through some more points and sort of just basically review it again because it was one of those games that has left quite the fallout. Adam, what did you make of it?
There was little to make about it. I think I don't come in as harshly on Arsenal's setup as you do. I think given the fact that I made this point on multiple episodes leading up to the game that Arsenal coming to the Etihad is like us going to Anfield. They typically turn up and they are shell-shocked for 90 minutes and they kind of crumple into these little shells of men and just get kind of slapped around for 90 minutes. And I think their plan was to not allow that to happen. To be fair, we've seen City do that at Anfield before. I can think back to 18-19, City set up in a similar way and almost nicked it with a late Riyad Mahrez pen. But yeah, it's the three-horse race component that makes this game annoying. That's what it is. If this was last season and it was still just City and Arsenal and the rest of the chasing pack was a solid 10 to 12 points away, I'd say fine. I expect Arsenal to do an Arsenal thing and slip up and drop points somewhere that they typically shouldn't in the run-in and will pounce on that because that's what City do. But the three-horse race component makes this game a little bit harder to take.
Yeah, look, we'll get into all of the ramifications now. Ollie and Alex spoke a bit about their feelings on the title race, and I think you said it in the week, Adam, there's no point in us sitting here, even though we did it as a segment a couple of weeks ago, saying Liverpool are going to win this game, Arsenal are going to score 4 goals against, who knows? The pressure is obviously massive at this time of year and anything can happen, trademark, cliche, et cetera, et cetera. But Luke, let's focus on what has been occupying some free rental space in my mind for the last 24, 48 hours or so. And it is Arsenal's setup because I know Ollie Kerr sort of had a word, and Alex was very diplomatic, I think is probably the best way to describe his assessment on yesterday's show, where he basically said, you know, they're entitled to do what they want. Had they scored a last-minute goal on the counter-attack, then they would have been calling it a masterclass. They didn't. And I think for me, that's sort of part of the problem when trying to assess this game, is that Arsenal came to the Etihad Stadium. Yes, they have mental fragilities and scars from previous seasons. I think it's 2014-15, something like that, the last time they won at the Etihad Stadium. So going on a decade. However, they came here as the form team. They came here as the team top of the table. And they came here as the team who had the Premier League title in their own hands, essentially. They knew that getting a win would probably put City out of the race. They also knew that City winning would probably put themselves out of the race. Do you not just think it's a bit cowardice, a bit sheepish from Arteta? And don't get me wrong, the way they set up was magnificent. However, at the same time, you're looking at that performance as the informed team. They scored some like 60 goals in the last four matches, something daft like that. And I'll make no bones about it. I thought they looked like a non-league team in an FA Cup game.
I mean, with my Arsenal hat on, for example, if I was an Arsenal fan right now, if they lost the game, they were out the title race, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If they draw or win the game, they have not won the league by drawing or winning that game, in my opinion. I feel like Arteta did the clever thing as a manager, where he knew that if he would, I mean, look at the goal scoring stats. What is it, like 57 game like goal scoring run we've been on? Like you can't really, like, more often than not, you can't stop us. But they did a perfect job at that. Sometimes six at the back, sometimes five at the back.
Oh, Jesus was playing left back at one point, which was hilarious.
Tell you what, I'm not miswatching him. Jesus Christ, in that first half when I was seeing him break through.
Gabriel Jesus, not Jesus Christ.
I was watching him, and I was like, I'm so happy you're not in our team anymore, dude. But I get it now. Like, when I was watching it in the game, same as you in the stadium, everybody was in the same boat of, what are they doing? Why are they not attacking us? What are they doing? But now I've been slept on it, it makes sense there. They wanted to just keep it tight, keep it compact. I agree with Alex's take on the fact that us bringing on two wingers in 60 minutes probably derailed Arteta's plan as well. And maybe he thought, I'm happy with a point here. There's no point in risking it. I kind of get it. So if I was an Arsenal fan, I would be very, very happy with a point.
Really?
Yeah. And do you know what? I was listening to Talk Sport on the way home with my dad in the van. Every Arsenal fan that came on said exactly the same. It's just mentality, mate, because they would have rolled over and died in the last 5 years, but they didn't do it at the Etihad. And the Etihad is their hardest game. As Adam said, that is their Liverpool away. And they came over, got a point, nearly snatched a win with Martinelli. Like, they had better chances than us, to be honest with you. They nearly snatched a win. And it was a case of a matter of, it's a mentality shift where now they've got so much confidence going into the title running. So if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be happy. As a City fan, I'm extremely disappointed.
Interesting. Interesting.
If you look at it, Arsenal last season, you know, lost both fixtures, and they come into this season and they take 4 points from two games. They're absolutely going to be over the moon with that. But I think
the context is the important part, isn't it? Because they can say, okay, we got 4 points against City this season, but they could end up finishing 1 point behind Liverpool. And I think at this time of the season, had this game been in January, I'm sat here going, oh my God, what a performance from Arsenal. But there's 9 games of the season left, and they've now, I reckon, probably gift-wrapped Liverpool the title by themselves not wanting to properly have a go for it.
I think it's Arsenal admitting that had they had a go for it, they would have been slapped around again.
Would they have? But you look at City, do you think they would have been able to? Have we seen that this year? You know, this is, I think, in isolation.
Yeah, but how often have we said that about City, where they haven't quite looked up to it, and then out of nowhere, they will just click into gear. And sometimes it tends to be in this fixture exactly where they click into gear. Last year, the momentum was kind of already swinging, but it was that 4-1 at the Etihad last year where it was like, okay, City, you're going to go on and win the title. It's already over. But I think the thing that frustrates me the most from this performance, it had nothing to do with Arsenal, was the fact that when City did fashion a few half chances, it felt really weak when they got there. I'm not even gonna mention his name out on the right wing that came in as a substitute. I'm not even gonna start this conversation. I remember a specific moment when I think Bernardo Silva kind of wrestled the ball back in the box and got to the touchline and just kind of like limp footed the ball across the box and it hit the first man and went out. And it was moments like that where it felt like City didn't really grasp the urgency when trying to create chances because they, I think it's been drilled into them for so long. Patience, patience, patience. You keep doing what you're doing and eventually the chance will come. But they weren't creating a ton yesterday. And when they did get into those situations, they were so poor. And that was the thing that was so frustrating for me.
I don't see how what more City necessarily could have done against a back 11. Luke, I mean, you're the patron saint of Brexit ball, as we well know. But you know, surely, like you look at that performance and you go, "Yeah, it's fantastic defensively." But at the same time, I do want to move on from the Arsenal performance and speak about City, because City were mediocre, probably at best. But at the same time, you kind of need something from the opposition, don't you? And I think that's possibly where City's game plan themselves fell down.
I mean, we've broken down 10 men behind the ball many, many times in the last 10 years. The fact of the matter
is... Not as good as a defence as that, though. That's the thing. Exactly. You've got Saliba and Gabriel.
That's all
and
it was.
It's not Ben Mee and Christopher Ayer at Brentford, for example,
agreed.
Is it?
Yeah. They just... The only quality was on show yesterday was in the sixes and the centre-halves. The only quality. Apart from Gavardio at left-back, I thought he had an okay game as well. But there was no quality in that game at all. The amount of overhit passes that I kept seeing... I was like, God's sake, just chill out. Like, in the first 20 minutes of the game, we looked terrified. And we looked like we were rushing everything, like we were trying to play on times two speed. Like, just chill out. Like, they're playing 10 men behind the ball. Yes, they are great. We're a great team, great football players. They're very, I mean, in football sense as well. You've got an almost perfect centre-half in Saliba who does have a fault to his game. You've got a Rice who is sensational as well. But... just chill out, play our game. Don't let them rile you up is what I was taking from it in the first half, especially. And also, another point I wanted to make is the only width we had in the first half was Akanji and Gavardio, and both of them did not want to even have the ball at the feet, yet alone move the ball forward. Usually,
yeah.
I know we've been very critical on Kyle Walker this year. He was a miss,
I think. I think big he was a miss.
Whenever Kyle Walker gets a ball, he turns towards their goal. That's the first thing he always does. Whereas Akanji wanted to stop the ball dead or move it back. That's all he wanted to do. And I get why. I get it. Same with Gavardio, where at one point Gavardio went on the right flank, beat two men, and we thought, go on, lad. And he just panicked. And I was like, and then we got width, and the width we brought on had less quality than the players already put in. And I was like, it was just a day of frustration for me.
Yeah. And I think, I hate to go back to it, but I think that's possibly down to Arsenal. And again, fantastic if that's what they were wanting to do. But at the same time, it's not going to win them a league title. And having slept on it, I thought they were shit yesterday. I want to publicly state I've changed my mind. I thought they were fucking shit. But let's leave Arsenal, Adam, because in part two, I want to touch on two big names in the City team who have come under criticism and what the sort of next few weeks and months might look for them. But finally, just sort of taking a look at the bigger picture on the title race, a City sort of limping to a pretty sad title defence, and I don't mean in the necessary sense that it's been poor from City this season. They've won three titles in a row. The fact that they've done back-to-back once is incredible, let alone back-to-back-to-back, and they're still in a title race and could very well go on and win it again this season. But at the same time, it just feels a bit like there's just something missing, and... I know Ollie said it yesterday, but the results in the big games at home have been diabolical, even though they've not necessarily lost any. I don't know. It just feels a bit lame, possibly the best way to describe it.
I'm really torn on this because the standards that City have set these sort of expectations ingrained into all of us that I think are... most generations would consider wholly unrealistic, and then City keep meeting and exceeding those standards. And there's just so many times when we've sat here and said, it feels like this is kind of fizzling out, and then it doesn't, and it will pop off at some point. And there's still every chance in the world that City do that. You know, you look at this time last year, City were, I think, 8 points behind Arsenal. Mm-hmm. They had a couple of games in hand, to be fair, but games in hand aren't automatic wins, as we know. And obviously City went on to win the title by what, 5-6 points? So I'm very torn on whether or not City can just click into gear out of nowhere. I think there are plenty of signs that say they probably won't. You know, players that have come in to replace the likes of Ilkay Gundogan and Riyad Mahrez, who you always knew what you were getting from players like that. You don't tend to always know what you're getting from Mateo Kovacic or Jeremy Doku or Jasko Gvardiol, who, by the way, was superb against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've used this word identity a million times on this podcast in the last few weeks, and I don't quite see what it is with City. And it seems like every passing game, they're trying to do something different, whether that's on purpose or whether it's, you know, on accident, I guess. So the cynic in me says the signs aren't there that they'll do anything but fizzle out. And look, with the standards they've set, fizzling out might still mean an FA Cup and a Champions League double, which is incredible. It's something that only that most clubs can only dream about. But when it comes to the Premier League title race, at the moment, you'd have more faith in Liverpool and Arsenal probably dropping less points in the next 9 games. And that's simple mathematics tell us City don't win the league then.
Yeah, Luke, final sort of, not final words on the title race, hopefully, but sort of on the back of that game, where are you stood?
Yeah, so we're not out of the title race. Like the head loss on Twitter at the moment is making it seem like we're 8 points behind with like 2 games to go. It's not true. Like we're still only 3 points behind. I know
4 really with the goal difference.
Yeah, with goal difference. Yeah, technically 4. But like, did anyone watch Liverpool? Salah missed about 18 chances, and he's doing it every game at the moment. Like
they're winning,
not
though,
this cutthroat killing machine. By the way,
they've been like
Arsenal,
this for
as we've just seen, they're not a cutthroat killing machine either. Like,
but we've seen Arsenal's one thing. I think it's hard to have faith in Arsenal doing anything, essentially, because they've proven time and time again that when they get there, they'll slip and fall. But Liverpool have amassed 99 points, 97 points, 91 points, playing that way, where it feels like every game is chaotic. They concede a load of chances. They have to come flying back in the last 10 to 15 minutes of a game. But they've done that so relentlessly that there is a precedent set that you can still expect them to play that way all the way up until the final day, and they'll still get to the finish line. It just so happens that City beat them to the finish line by a nose hair a few seasons on the bounce. But I think with Arsenal, or with Liverpool, sorry, they could play that way the whole year and still not drop points, because they kind of thrive in those type of games.
Agreed, yeah. But I do also see them just against the littler teams, and they have got the easiest running on paper. But I would back Liverpool in a very high-pressure sort of open game against a big club or a better team. But when they're having to grind out results against the lower teams where they're trying to break down a 10 man behind the ball, they can struggle. We have seen it in previous years as well. So it's not out of the run. We are not favourite at the moment. Liverpool are the favourites, in my opinion. Arsenal second, us third. But all it takes is just one crazy weekend where both teams lose 2-1 and we win 3 or 4-0, and all of a sudden the media are going to, the red headlines are going to write, is it Klopp's great farewell? And then you never know. There's so much of a season left to play. There's still European Cup competitions that could come into play as well. And that's including us. Like, we could be knackered by the time we're playing, say, 2-3 weeks down the line based on European Cups as well. So keep the faith is what I'm going to say to people. A bit of a rousing message. Man City, if you're listening, keep the faith. Just be a bit calmer. Just relax. And if we don't win the league this year, we still won the treble. And you know what? If Liverpool win it this year, they won't win it next year because all the players are leaving anyway. So there's a bit of positivity for you guys.
If Liverpool win it this year, I won't see it happen next year, because I won't see anything happen next year.
Oh, God. That sounds like a good place to park part one. Listeners, join us after this short break and we'll continue the debrief from the Arsenal game.
A
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. 5 episodes for you this week, Monday through to Friday. Make sure you are subscribed, followed, all of that lovely business. Adam, let's... Haaland or KDB, where do you want to start?
Let's start with Haaland.
Erling Haaland. Now, he is having a bit of a rough time of it in these big matches, but how much of that do you attribute to the way City are first of all setting up, the way defenders are marking against him, the space he's got to operate in, or, as has been suggested by some, not necessarily my opinion, but Haaland's overall quality? And I think he had, I don't know if it actually registered as a chance, that sort of air kick in the 6-yard-ish box, but probably a big enough chance for him to have, we've seen him score similar goals like that before. The only real sniff he had all afternoon, and it was another one of those games where the bulletins afterwards, I think Micah Richards called him a League 2 player or something like that, and I don't know, Micah Richards really started to grate on me a little bit, but at the same time, you know, what did you make of Haaland showing?
I think that was Roy Keane, by the way, that called him a league.
Oh, was it? Oh, apologies.
We can calibrate how much credence we want to give that statement based on the fact that it was Roy Keane saying it.
But Micah was chiming in, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but I'm not too worried about Haaland. I think that the biggest failure has been getting the ball to him in some of these big games. Now, there have been games, particularly in the Spurs game and the Liverpool home games, which were obviously a 3-3 draw and a 1-1 draw, where he had his chances and should have taken them and should have won City the game.
Chelsea as well. There was a few shots in that game.
Yeah.
And so he's had his chances to earn City probably 6 to 9 more points this season, and he hasn't taken them. There's absolutely no denying that. I don't think it's necessarily any sort of demerit on his overall quality, because I think he's shown all the way from essentially Red Bull Salzburg that he's not a flash in the pan player. He's not a one season wonder. You know, I think everyone looks at the standards of last season and says, well, you know, maybe we all overrate him because of last season, but he was scoring a goal a game at Dortmund as well. You know, he's done it everywhere he's gone. Obviously last year, I think, was more than a goal a game, but I think there has been an issue in recent games of getting the ball to him. And I think that's due in large part to the fact that I said I wouldn't mention his name, but you look yesterday, I mean, Jeremy Doku had the beating of, I think it was Tomiyasu on that side in the second half, about 12 times. And at no point did the ball get near Erling Haaland. And he was making runs. He was peeling off the back shoulder of Saliba. He was standing on the penalty spot. He was standing at the back post for little dinks to the back post. The ball never got to him.
Did you see that clip from earlier on in the season? I think it was Theo Walcott. Maybe it was after City Arsenal in the first fixture. I can't remember. Or one of the games where Theo Walcott essentially said something along the lines of, it's hard for Haaland because Doku most times doesn't know what he's doing himself. And he'll cut in and he'll go back and he'll do this and he'll do that. And like you say, he's making the runs. However, where we saw last year with Jack Grealish, for example, Grealish was kind of one-dimensional in that sense, but it worked, and he knew how to play with him because the ball would get to him, and he'd come in, and
Riyad Mahrez was the same way. You knew what Riyad Mahrez was going to do. He was going to cut back onto his left foot, and he was going to pick you out at the back post, and it was essentially not going to hit the first or second defender. It was going to get to you at the back post. Kevin De Bruyne is the same way. And like you said, Jack Grealish, he doesn't make space for himself often, but when he does, he doesn't tend to put a foot wrong with his final ball. And you're spot on. When the players that are picking the ball up out wide are Jeremy Doku, Yasko Gvardiol, and Manuel Akanji, the service into the box is going to be helter-skelter, and that's not going to help Haaland because he doesn't know what type of runs he can make. So I think it was a kind of a perfect storm of not being able to get the ball to him. I think we can say with Haaland that he is a streaky player. It's just that his streaks last about 9 months, whereas Gabriel Jesus' streaks last about 9 hours, and then he would, you know, he'd cool
nine
off.
9 minutes.
Again. Yeah. So
it wouldn't last, mate. It wouldn't start, yeah, alone. Anything else.
So with Haaland, he's got so much credit in the bank. It's going to take a long time for me to be like, okay, there's an actual issue here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no issue for me at all. Like, there's no issue. I'm going to look at yesterday's game in isolation to previous performances because I do feel like it was a case of he just didn't get the ball. He had 23. I've just seen he's had 23 touches all game, and he was making the runs as we said. Like, and mate, that floated cross to the back stick was pissing me off. Every ball was just floated. But there's no direction to it. I hate it when they just put the foot under the ball and just hope it goes somewhere. Like, there's no sort of direction in it. And especially when you're looking at Haaland, where he's always going to be in them positions just off the shoulder. The ball has to be inch perfect to get to him because he finds that 1.5 yard of space. But the ball just never really got to him yesterday. But I wouldn't say if there's a problem for him at the moment. Obviously, if things do carry on in the next couple of months, we can revisit this conversation. But for me, I just think it was a case of he got man-marked by one of the best centre-halves in the world yesterday with Saliba. I thought he was great. He was great to watch, you know. Like, to be able to watch his organisation of defence, him and Rice, mate, he was literally like just Ben White was just being ordered where to go the whole of the first half. And to be fair to him, it worked perfectly. Like, it was good to watch in that sense where, like, Arsenal fans bloody love Ben White, by the way. But he sung his name more than anyone.
Do you not? Anyone. I can't stand him in the nicest way possible.
Yeah,
I
agree. I think he's one of the most unlikable players to not play for your club. But if he plays for your club, you love him. He's like Bernardo Silva for us. Everybody hates Bernardo Silva, but we love him. And, like, and Saliba just made Ben White up mustard yesterday, which is fair enough. So, yeah, I don't think there's a big problem with Haaland at the moment.
Ben White looks like he was born on the plane of a wing headed for Ibiza.
He does. He does.
I think that's my biggest beef with him.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure he's an absolutely lovely guy, but like you say, Luke, very unlikable. I want to move on, and maybe this plays into the same conversation with Haaland, because I totally agree, no problem with him at all. However, as is the case with Kevin De Bruyne and a conversation that's popped up, Adam, do you think City are, I don't want to use the word too reliant, or sorry, Guardiola, because obviously he's the guy who makes the decisions, but I don't want to use the word too reliant, but there's been times this season, and there were times yesterday where you're looking at the game plan and you're going, City could probably do with Erling Haaland being off the pitch, assuming there's a replacement, which there is. Julian Alvarez didn't play. City could probably do with Kevin De Bruyne coming off the pitch, assuming there was someone who could go in and do that role. There was Phil Foden, who got hooked. And for me, that was probably the worst decision Guardiola's made all season. And I know there's been a couple, but Kevin De Bruyne, I felt yesterday, just clearly wasn't on it, and I don't know if there was an after sort of lingering situation from Anfield when he got dragged off. I reckon he was probably playing better at Anfield against Liverpool than he was against Arsenal. But at the same time, you know, it's Kevin De Bruyne and he can make something happen out of nothing, and that's, I guess, why he stayed on. It just felt like the wrong one.
I find it hard to overreact to Kevin De Bruyne stinkers because he's been this way his whole City career. There's very few 7 out of 10s from Kevin De Bruyne. There are 10 out of 10s and there are 2 out of 10s. And there's very little in between.
But should he have stayed on, do you think? For Phil Foden, because this again is the context. If you just keep Kev on the pitch.
If you had kept him on the pitch and you could still figure out a way to get Foden central to be able to pick up those little pockets of space, which it seemed like that would be the only way City would have any sort of threat, is if somebody could make something happen in the middle of the park and in kind of you know, a crowded penalty area, which obviously is Phil Foden's specialty at this point. So yeah, if you could figure out a way, you know, if you had to push De Bruyne out wide, because I would have had no problem if you had shoved De Bruyne out to the wing and had him just camp on the edge of the box and put in those little crosses, because it's not like Arsenal had any threat going the other way. So you don't need to rely on Kevin De Bruyne to track back, because there was nothing to track back and cover. but yeah, I think like the boys said on yesterday's episode, it was kind of one of those games where, because you weren't creating a ton of opportunities from the setup, from the system of play, there wasn't any sort of identity leading you to, you know, chance after chance. It was going to take a moment of magic, a freak moment of football to find a goal. And if you're picking out any two players in probably the Premier League, maybe Europe, Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne are probably those two that are going to combine for that moment of magic. So it's really difficult to say whether or not those players should be sacrificed when things aren't going well, because they are the kind of players that can lead to things not going well, but they also are the kind of players that are going to make something happen when no one else can. So you've hinted at before that De Bruyne could potentially be kind of a super sub in games like this, and he could come on and shake things up. But I don't know. I'm very torn on it, because like I said, he's probably, him and Haaland are probably the two players you'd choose from any team to combine for that special moment that City needed desperately.
Yeah. It's easy to say in retrospect, isn't it, Luke, that, oh, Kevin De Bruyne could have, you know, come off the pitch and Phil Foden could have stayed on. But I don't know. You tell me your thoughts during the game. For me, it felt early on like he wasn't there. And even though we've seen De Bruyne have relative stinkers, his stinkers are probably some players' best ever games, but you could always tell, like, there'd be a chance that was created that wasn't converted, or there'd be a moment where he picked up the ball and he skipped past a player and maybe had a shot and it whistled wide, you know, something like that. He'd be trying stuff. It might not have come off, but he'd be trying. However, the stuff, even the simple stuff he was trying, I recall a couple of passes that were pretty wayward and getting caught in possession once or twice. And I don't know, sometimes you just get that feeling that it isn't your day. And I think that's, as we go into the latter parts of Kevin De Bruyne's career, that's when that has to be managed. If he's not having a good day, like at Anfield, don't play him. And I think it's a difficult conversation Guardiola's going to have to be having, a difficult situation he's going to find himself in. But Kevin De Bruyne can't play at Manchester City forever. And his greatness has to be protected in that sense, instead of just kind of, okay, you go and make something happen again. What's that mean where it's like, salam, brother, I'm asking for the same favour for the 1500th, you know, something like that. It kind of felt like what it felt like yesterday. But whereas before, since he haven't had the players who could replace him, Foden's there, Alvarez there, you know, they've got the players on the bench who can come on and make a difference.
Mate, I said it half time to the lads I was with, I'd have carted him off at half time. I thought it was shocking. I thought it was absolutely shocking. Like, don't get me wrong, yeah, he has got that talent. He's got the ability to turn, like, nothing into, or turn water into wine, hasn't he, really? But for me, he was so bad. Like, like you were saying, with the little misplaced passes here and there, like, he just wasn't on it at all. He's also lost his half a yard. Like, yeah, I remember at certain points, like, in his, say, like, between sort of like, between 2016 and 2019, mate, he was rapid over the space of like 20 yards, where he just burst through. And there was a couple instances where he could have burst through and he just didn't have it in his legs anymore. And I kind of felt a bit for him. Like, I would have took him up. Well, you got someone like Jack Grealish on the bench. I know he's not played a lot. I know match fitness is probably key as well. Oh, mate, I'd have brought, if it had been me, I know this is probably stupid because who cares about Luke Barnes' opinion over Pep Guardiola. But I would have brought on Jack Grealish, slapped him on the left, put Foden in behind Haaland, and then swap Gvardiol and Ake around, because Ake behind Grealish is a dream. They work so well together.
Well, Ake went off, didn't he?
Yeah. That is obviously in hindsight. That's what I was saying throughout the first half. Then he got took off. What's happening here? And then Gvardiol, he's got everything there, and he really, maybe he just needs to have a bit more sort of, I don't know, a bit an arm around his shoulders, say, go on, just go for it a little bit, maybe. But I can kind of see he's not played a huge amount of football for Man City, has he, really, with injuries and stuff? Like, he's not had a complete stretch. But I just wanted Foden to not be taken off, to be honest with you. He was the man where, when you've got someone in that tight space where this season he's just been able to just like turn on a sixpence and just play a ball through, beat a man, take a pot shot off. We needed more sort of like shots on target. We just needed more shots on target. Mm. And that is what Foden will bring you. He'll bring you 2-3 shots on target a game just by just... and then...
Like United, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Shot out of absolutely nothing.
Look at David Raya. Look at David Raya today. What, he made one save off Ake's shoulder. And then his pass completion, Raya's yesterday, was shocking. Oh, shocking. He just kept booting it out of the foot. He was shite. Raya was awful.
I thought
we didn't even pressure him. And I was like, we just need someone to take a pot shot. And I thought Kevin De Bruyne would have done that. But he was like drifting in places. Mm. And I was like, I would have carried him off half time. I just didn't think he was there. But as Adam said, we've seen him have 9 out of 10s, or he has 2 out of 10s, where he just wasn't at the races for me. It was weird taking off Foden. Maybe you're right, Amos. I think I'm going to agree with you with Liverpool after his reactions being subbed off. And again, you shouldn't have that dictate in your management, in my opinion.
I think Laporte recently, in an interview about his time at City, said that something along the lines of, the line is that at a price, everybody's sellable in the City dressing room, but that he said that wasn't actually the case. You know, there are a few favourites, and that's only natural, isn't it? That's football, and it does feel like, I don't know, Kevin De Bruyne is one of those guys who has a free pass, and understandably so. The fella is the best midfielder in Premier League history, for my money. He's the best player in Manchester City history, again, in my money. But at the same time, sometimes maybe he shouldn't play the full game. Adam, before we get ourselves cancelled and stripped of any sort of respectability, if we even had it to begin with, we'll call it a day. Thank you very much. Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Luke, thank you very much. That was, as has often been the case this year, after big matches, a little bit cathartic. However, I will double down in saying that Arsenal were pathetic and leave it at that.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you very much, guys. Also, just a final note, Rodri is still the best player in world football at the moment. Thank you.
Yes, I think we can all agree on that one. Listeners, let us know your thoughts on the game. We'll be back tomorrow, starting to look ahead to the midweek fixture against Aston Villa, another big game at the Etihad Stadium. But until then, we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.